Once again, welcome to the Month 7 Investor Elite Hour briefing. And the period that we're presenting today covers the trading results from the 1st of July to the 31st of July. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contract for assets, goods, and services supplied to investment quality companies, or indeed credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. So what that really means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, they tend to be the larger company or a bank, for example. It would be a household name, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium-sized supplier. We call those micro to medium-sized suppliers originators because they originate the debt obligation that is the transaction that creates the ETR, or exchange traded receivable, and that's what we ultimately trade on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the larger company's liability to the smaller one, and we in Credit Exchange buy those ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. So in buying them at a nominal discount, when the ETR is settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discount that it was purchased for creates a margin, and that's the margin that creates the yield or return to your investors. Credit Exchange also provides credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and so forth. Essentially, they all work on the same principle that the traded ETR is a business transaction. We provide the liquidity, and we get a commission for doing it, pretty much in the same way a bank charges interest. So as the briefing states, at the end of July, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 20.15 million. That's pretty much in line with June's figure, albeit slightly lower. RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and a revolving sale agreement is the document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business, or the originator, and Credit Exchange. So the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, is a commitment by that originator to sell us a certain value of ETR in any given period, typically a year. So let's say, for example, we have an originator that needs a revolving credit facility of 250,000 to run their business. They're coming along to us, much like they used to go to a bank, I guess, and then apply for that credit facility. If we agree to give it to them, then that 250,000 on a revolving basis every 60 days will be written up in the revolving sale agreement. So they're committing to selling us 250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, or 1.5 million worth of ETR every 12 months. So that's the commitment that we're referring to when we talk about the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, with the exchange. So as I stated, the value of those commitments at the end of July was 20.15 million. Some of the people on this call may recall that during May, and indeed in the June briefing, I explained that there was a decline in the total value of RSA contracts. At that time, I explained that this was basically a culmination of several months of trading that compounded in May stroke June. And as stated, the decline had already turned to a sharp increase, in that there was a significant positive increase in trading during July. So, in fact, week 28 and week 29 were the largest value of trades in 2 weeks in the history of the exchange, and were both in excess of 10 million of trade in those 2 weeks. So these are both another almost 50% increase on the previous record all time from week 24 of this year. So where we showed back then it was 7 million, obviously now we've just hit twice over the 2 million mark. So at the May briefing, I predicted that almost all COVID-19 related trading issues would be washed out by the end of June. I can now confirm that prediction was correct. And again, I stated then, I'm doing again here now, that there might be some surprises in the long tail, but they're not evident. They're not showing up. So we've been fortunate on the positive side in terms of trading, and even more fortunate in that the originators that we deal with have not failed in the main. So they're all actively back trading, maybe not at full capacity, but certainly they're back trading and dealing with us and paying us back as they should. So the briefing then goes on to say that there was 25.41 million fully allocated, and this was above the June figure of 22.69. What this figure means is that at the end of July 31st, we held 25.41 million worth of ETR, or said another way, there was 25.41 million of investors' funds actively in the market on that day. So you take that figure and you add it to the 20.15 that we have in RSA contracts in terms of future orders that we have in our books. When you add both those together, it represents a total of circa 45 million, which again is consistent with the figures that we had in June. Moving on to the next figure, it states that the investors redeemed roughly 100,000 of their funds in July, meaning that in the case of last month, I think it was 18 people collectively withdrew money. Actually, there were around 16 people withdrew money, and at the same time, 18 other people deposited money or signed new RSA contracts with us, or RPA contracts, because the investor signs the buy agreement. So very, very light exit, and very light money in exit in the last month, which is actually unusual. Should be higher than that. If you recall from June's briefing, the withdrawals had leveled off because the withdrawals by professional investors had stabilized. And as you probably all know, the credit exchange doesn't deal direct with the end investor or retail investors, as we call them. But we do have a number of professional investors that will deal directly with us. So those professional investors would use us as their cash equivalent or cash alternative. And they obviously withdrew lots of money during the initial stages of the crisis to shore up other positions. So they're using our service as they should, but would have had a significant enough draw of exit funds during that period. But it's all come back, or pretty much all of it has come back. And typically we would be at a 3-to-2 ratio. So if we take if we took 3 million in a week, we would see 2 million going out. That would be the typical flow. However, in the month of July, that was 5-to-1. So we had 5 times more money coming in than we did going out. I think that's just the inflow is stabling out what the outflow was earlier in the year. So overall, the investor market, it seems to be stabilizing. So where there was a sharp increase in the exits during March, they've eased back, and as I say, the magnitude is to the positive. So the indication is that the exchange is correcting overall, pretty much back to the kind of stability that you would have seen in August of last year. So what I mean by that is that the market has taken the corona shock in its stride, and it's a true testament, I suppose, to the stability, the liquidity, and or the demand in the market it serves. The events of H1 reminded me of a discussion I had with a senior bank official back in 2011 while setting the business up. He asked me why I thought there would be a market for the exchange such as ours. to which are applied at the depths of the recession from the previous year, when almost every indices had seen previously unreconciled declines, unrecorded declines, I should say. The level of delinquent debt across Western Europe rose from its typical 1.7% to no more than 2.6%. So given the correct margin and risk management, so long as you didn't hold too much of that segment, this was probably the most stable place to put cash. So it was true back then and is yet again, I think, true today. So lest we forget, whatever about high fashion, consumer luxury items and all the other hallmarks of a booming economy, no matter how dark an economy gets, people still eat, sleep, work, pay for utilities and so on in order to exist, even at the most moderate of incomes. So when you combine that with the surge of concerns about personal health and the demand for visors, sanitizers, gloves, gowns, ventilators, and all the other trading equivalent, our market is actually bucking the trend and to the positive. So where last year people were spending their money on luxury items, they're now either saving or surviving. And meanwhile, the exchange is serving both of those markets. So the 100,000 redemptions in July corrected, and again, returning to the positive to pre-COVID trading patterns. So we're back to business as usual in June and July. In June, and obviously July confirms this. As stated at several prior briefings, the economic crisis is good for investable ETR investors. And by this, I mean, brings the focus of the presentation to the ETR average duration figure at 124 days. As you may recall, we call this ETR average duration the credit index. And it's a measure of the average time it takes for an ETR to get settled, or in other words, from the day the ETR is issued and purchased by us, the number of days that it takes for that ETR debt to be extinguished and cash to come back to us, or return to cash. So in June, the credit index hit an all-time high of 134, and thankfully it's dropped 10 days back to the current 124. But either way, if you compare this to July of 2019, when the index was 82 days, it means that July 2019, you are getting settled roughly four times a year. At 125, you're getting settled roughly three times a year. So the originator that requires a revolving facility of 100,000 to run their business last year now needs 140,000 to run the same business this year. So obviously a 40% increase there. That being the case, if originators need more finance, then that means the exchange needs more investor funds to meet demand. So to repeat what I've been saying all year, our forecast predicted a strong growth in the exchange's business during 2020. And notwithstanding the negatives and positive effects of the coronavirus on our market, that prediction remains firm, continues to remain firm as I speak. So yesterday, the Federal Open Market Committee, or FOMC in the US, confirmed the general soundings in the market that inflation is likely to become, potentially to become a real problem for the economy. As you all know, inflation, when it starts to kick in, typically investors yield in bank deposits, etc., should typically track upwards too. But unfortunately, that historic logic has long left the room and is distinctly lacking in the global markets, where if, as it seems to be, inflation starts to rise, the deposit interest yields are doing the exact opposite at zero or even going to negative rates. So matters continue to confuse and compound everybody. And then you've got, as I spoke about earlier, the annualized drop in GDP for July down at 32. That extends from the June figure that was the worst ever on record at 34. So the only real contrary and seemingly stable index showing any move to the positive is the Baltic Dry Index, or BDI. For those who are unfamiliar with what BDI is, this is the index that tracks rates for shipping in dry bulk commodities. So the index tracks rates for the three main vessel sizes that ferry dry bulk, and contrary to its name, it's not restricted to the Baltic Sea countries or to a few commodities like crude oil. Instead, the Baltic Index takes into account 23 different shipping routes, carrying everything from coal, iron ore, grains, dry bulk materials, commodities in general. So as indices go, it looks at the cargo movements and thereby consumption of most major commodities. For us as a trade credit organization, it's the barometer for trade activity and volume. So the index is positive, albeit it's down 27% off what it was in July 2019. It has recovered from a low of 425 in May to over 2,000 in July. So four times growth in just that two-month period, which is be consistent with our own experience during that period, May to June. It seems to have leveled off at the moment. It's about 1,500 mark for the past number of weeks. And what all that means to us, it means that trade, like consumption and cargo, may be off peak, but they're still active, still buoyant, excuse the pun, and we're trading with the best of them, thankfully. Moving on then to the lowest value trade was back in May, like my friends in the BDI index, at 585, or 5.85, I should say, million. Turned sharply to the upward in June, moving to 22 million tight. And then in July, improved on that again to a further 37 million in the month. So at yesterday's board meeting, it was noted that the exchange is on target income-wise and is looking at a 75% increase on 2019's numbers, whilst at the same time being some 20% lower on its projected cost base. Okay, moving on from that, below the trading figure of the month for 37 million, you will see that in the same period, treasury performance was at 28.84. This means that we spent 37 and we collected 28. Trade and treasury monitor this to ensure that the trade balance of funds in versus funds out remains stable and within the control parameters set by the master risk policy that governs the credit risk policy. So we'd like to see this more balanced. However, as trade grows, as it has by some seven or more times in 2 months, treasury collections will naturally take time to catch up, particularly with a credit index running at 124 days, as mentioned earlier. Moving to the center of the document, where we see the list of 10 largest investable ETR holdings, the top rated holdings, these are the two lists that show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amount of money at the end of July. And as you can see, the HSE, Huawei continued to hold their slots for the fifth consecutive month in a row. We've got Zhuhu, Unks, Is also remained in the top 10 with repeated appearances of people like Atradius, CBRE, and others. Good to see Dublin and Cork City Councils. Welcome back to the list after five or more months absent. And on the right, you've got then the highest rated debtors listed, regardless of the amount of their liability. As none of these are investment grade or have an investment grade rating at the end of July, this is just a selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these listings then continues to demonstrate a significant change in the typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Obviously, the current health pandemic continues to show that the HSE in Ireland and the NHS in England, along with others in the health and community, are off their April high of more than 25% of our book, down to 13 to 14% over the last couple of months. Looking to the last third of the year, we actually can see that figure rising again, as the originators for our credit facilities in this particular sector are starting to emerge from America. So we'll report more on that in the August briefing next month. But returning to this pie chart and explaining a little bit more clearly, wholesale and retail has rapidly expanded. So funnily enough, while people are not out conducting their lives as they used to, they're obviously consuming more goods, be they online, being delivered or whatever, hence the significant growth in that sector. I'll also point out that we are edging out of using the NACE categorization system. We expect to finish that by the end of the year. It was too granular for our requirements and has been replaced by our own credit classification system. So, as I might have mentioned in the last briefing, where the NACE categories, which is the European Industry Classification System, will have maybe 30 subcategories for mining and quarrying, our classification system will only have one, mining. Because as far as we're concerned, the difference between open cast mining or quarrying and deep mining are kind of irrelevant to us. We're more interested in the trade receivable risk perspective and concerned with what we call the players in the trade, namely who's the miner, who's the customer or debtor, what's the product being mined, what's its primary and secondary market value, and what's our risk exposure on that transaction. So the credit classification is an important variable, but doesn't require the level of granularity that the NACE category uses. So we will have migrated all our data over the next, let's say, 2-3 months into entirely our new credit classification. Returning then to the actual performance of the exchange in July of this year versus July 2019, you can see the trading values were up 275%. And that takes the strong pullback to the positive from June and records the largest growth spike in the exchange's history, actually. So as I mentioned earlier, the year's target income and budget for a growth of 75% remains a credible prediction for the year, and we expect to deliver on it. Earlier, I spoke about the credit index 124 days, and next to that, you can see we still have more than 6,000 creditors or creditors, which is debtors and creditors pushed together, hence the name of the company. As per prior investor conference calls, relative to the number of trading companies in Ireland, that number of 6,000 is a statistically strong reference point when considering our economy. So the credit index, in my opinion, is a strong indicator of how credit control and payment cycles are performing in Ireland at any moment in time. And last but not least, to finish on our performance in July, the largest single trade was 3.6 million. This was very specifically a PPE equipment supply into the National Health Service, NHS, in the UK. As Andrew will tell you, the average value of an ETR is €2,000. But we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was valued at 3.67 million. Okay. Our trade credit offerings entered the market 4 years ago, back in 2016, relevant to the buy side of the transaction. So in a relatively short period of time, this has actually grown to become a central offering in many of the credit facilities that we fund today. In 2018, it was more than 30% of our business, and that seems to be around the point that we want to be. So we like these trades because as the deal size grows, they often feature letters of credit where the ultimate debtors are banks. So recently we've seen an increase also in the use of escrow accounts, where we are ultimately being settled from cash locked in these accounts. We actually prefer escrow deals over letters of credit, or LCs as they're called. Albeit to date, 100% of our LCs have settled without waiver. Statistically, more than 50% of the global market in letters of credit are flawed and require waivers in order to settle. So as we develop our escrow services, trading and settlement, escrow services, the trading in those and the settlement in those, we prefer this form of settlement over LCs because the control of the paperwork doesn't require the bank participation. So it's a much faster execution. So during the last third of 2020, we expect to deliver more on that service and trade significant volume and indeed values as a result. So we'll report on that in the coming months. Moving then to the trend section of the July briefing, we can see that the investor's yield or buy price during July averaged 1.820%. That again remains flat on April's number and seems a bit reluctant to move. Of course, the market stability is good, but I think we need to work much harder to get this number back over the 2 or even up to the 2.25 mark. So the team here are acutely aware of the need to improve on this figure. And rather than making false promises, let me say that it's a primary focus for me. And I think it's also a primary focus for the exchange for the remainder of the year to get that number pushed over at the 2 mark. I don't think we've done a good enough job, the truth be known. So let's get to it, as they say. So apart from that, you can see that the rate didn't really move very much, 1.815 to 1.835. It's tight, it's stable, but if I was an investor, I'd prefer to see 2 and 2.25. So that's where our aim is, that's what our objective is, and I'd like to think that we'll get there sooner rather than later. And then the briefing ends as pretty much as it started, just to repeat the fact that we had active revolving purchase agreements, or PAs, at 20.15 million. So that is our briefing finished.